Good afternoon. Hi, I think we're short on time, so I've been told we need to start. TikTok. So welcome very much to the White House. I introduced myself earlier. My name is Cecilia Rouse. I am a member of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. I work on issues in labor, economics, education, immigration, and I have the joy of also being a member of the President's Task Force on Puerto Rico. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about why we're here. We know that President Obama expanded the mandate of the task force to go beyond status, which we will have the opportunity to talk about later this afternoon. But he also expanded it to include economic development, which makes it much more interesting for an economist as myself. I personally am very interested to hear your ideas. This is a tough nut. We have the whole of the United States is coming, finally starting to show the signs of coming out of the greatest recession since the Great Depression. We know that Puerto Rico has been hit particularly hard by this recession. And this was on top of an economy that's been struggling even before the recession hit. We know that labor force participation isn't as great as we would like it to be. Unemployment rates are high. Income per capita could be much stronger. And I certainly believe that there is much more that we can be done to get Puerto Rico back on its path and to make it a stronger economy than ever. So with that, I'd like to introduce the other members of the task force that are here for this session. Some of them are also going to make a couple of opening remarks before we hear from you, because really this hour is about hearing from you. So to my left, I have Matthew K. Baker, who is from the Department of Treasury. To his left, we have Elmi Bermejo from the Department of Labor. To my right, we have Gabriela Lemos, also from the Department of Labor. We have William Ramos, who from Department of Commerce, who's standing in for Rick Wade, who is traveling with the secretary. No.
He's traveling for the secretary.
He's traveling for the secretary. And we also have Brandon Hurlbut from the Department of Energy. So with that, I just would give Matthew K. Baker a few minutes.
Sure. Thank you. And again, just to echo, welcome to the White House. Thank you for participating in this public hearing. Treasury continues its work to implement the various programs that were put in place under the Recovery Act for Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico also qualified for additional credit under the HIRE Act, which provides incentives for hiring and retaining unemployed workers. We have distributed under the Recovery Act $600 million to the island under the Making Work Pay credit. A similar amount will be distributed in 2010. We distributed $129 million to the island under the American Opportunity Tax Credit and expect a similar amount to be distributed again in 2010. Prior to that, in the 2008 stimulus, Treasury distributed over $1.2 billion to the island. In addition to that, I want to talk briefly about the financial system on the island. The first things we did at the Treasury Department as a new administration was obviously to put in place our financial stability plan for the U.S. financial system, because our basic premise was that we would be unable to have a sustainable recovery unless we had a financial system that was healthy and able to supply credit to support that recovery. That is equally true in Puerto Rico. Treasury has invested $1.5 billion of capital into Puerto Rican banking institutions. And obviously another important step occurred recently with a consolidated FDIC action to close three institutions on the island. In connection with that, there was a substantial amount of private capital raised for Puerto Rican banking institutions. Between capital raised and committed as part of that process, there was nearly $2 billion of capital raised or committed. That is the equivalent of the U.S. banking system raising nearly $200 billion of private capital, so in terms of the relative size of the two financial systems. So it's a large number. It was encouraging to see the Puerto Rican banking sector be able to find private capital. It's always been our premise that private capital is much more preferable to public capital and is better able to support lending and credit. I'm interested to hear from the group on credit conditions on the island. what your perception of what is happening day to day, and whether we are seeing some return to normalcy, or whether we're seeing a continuation of what was some obviously very troubling and difficult conditions that have existed over the last several years. Thanks.
Good afternoon, William Ramos from the Department of Commerce. The Department of Commerce has had a very, very robust engagement with the government of Puerto Rico and many of the municipalities across the island. Last November, I led a delegation of all the bureaus from the Department of Commerce at a conference that we had in Puerto Rico at Universidad del Este, in pretty much exposing the island to a whole plethora of programs that the Department of Commerce has, from NOAA to the census to MBDA and so forth. And that opened up a series of meetings and conference calls and the like since then, working very closely with the governor's office on federal affairs on a number of issues. The Department of Commerce, is one of the things that we do is we put out the gross domestic product every month. We're working with Puerto Rico to begin the discussions about converting their methodology into the U.S. methodology of doing the gross domestic product, because it's not compatible, and it will help them a lot. Based on their economic viability over the last few years, as was mentioned earlier, we're working very closely as well with the Secretary of the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. One of the major issues that we'll be working with Puerto Rico moving forward is with the President's National Export Initiative, which Secretary Locke chairs the committee on, working closely with Puerto Rico, and as they could be a bridge to Latin America on the export front for the United States government. We'll have more to talk about in a few minutes, but commerce is really engaged in Puerto Rico.
Just a few comments?
Sure. I'm Brandon Hurlbut from the Department of Energy. We have invested $125 million into Puerto Rico through the Recovery Act. We're very excited about some of the programs that are up and running there. We have four significant solar projects. We have retrofitted the Guarabo City Hall. We're involved in some of the smart grid planning, and we're also working closely with the two utilities about a possible transmission line between Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. We have contributed funding towards a study for that potential transmission line. So we're excited to continue to be engaged with Puerto Rico on growing, you know, green jobs and renewable energy on the island.
Okay, very briefly, I'm Gabriela Lemus. Again, I'm with the Department of Labor, and welcome to all of you. Just briefly, you know, we're really looking towards the future. Obviously, our major concern has been around unemployment and the high levels of unemployment on the island, not just the adult workforce, but also the youth, which is higher than the mainland. We've been really focusing on looking towards the future and what kind of training we can provide that will match what these other departments are doing in terms of the ability to attract investment, so that we're training the workforce for the future in areas like green jobs, possibility for healthcare, allied health, et cetera. We toured along with everyone and received a lot of really interesting information from regions, and municipalities, specifically around their interests, because we need to hear from you what you think, where the island can go and what kind of investments can be made and how we can also better leverage our resources as we move forward. So everything from infrastructure we heard, and as well as issues like tourism and ecotourism. So it's all looking forward. Open it up. So having said all of that, we would like to really open it up to you, because our role is to hear from you. So I ask that you make your comment, ask a question. I think each person gets, about 3 minutes?
2 minutes.
2 minutes to make their comments. And introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Juan Carlos Iturregui, New America Alliance. I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, and I just have an economic comment. Ms. Rouse mentioned all the dismal statistics from unemployment to poverty gaps, et cetera. And if you look at the data vis-a-vis Puerto Rico and the mainland, the economic gap has been increasing over the last three decades, and there's no solution in sight. And you alluded to the recession, but Puerto Rico has been experiencing an actual very pronounced economic contraction over the last 6 years. And my question to the group, Matthew from Treasury alluded to the two financial systems, and I think that's part of the challenge in Washington. They see it as something out there, but it's part of the national economy, and the Puerto Rico economy is responsible for over 300,000 jobs in the mainland. I'm wondering if there's a strategy, comprehensive economic strategy, to deal with all the inequalities that 4 million U.S. citizens out there are suffering from. Thank you.
Well, just to respond to that, from the outset of the TARP program, which has been the chief vehicle through which we've invested capital in banks, institutions on the island have been eligible for that program, have applied for that program, have been a part of that program from the beginning, and we've invested $1.5 billion in island institutions. Those investments were made early on in our program. We recently announced a new capital program for community development financial institutions, and again, both banks and credit unions on the island are eligible for that program, and we've done work to make sure that the that those institutions are aware of our programs and aware of the process they need to go through to apply for those programs. So we do very much see the financial system on the island as a critical part of what we are trying to do in terms of restoration of financial stability.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Mr. Ramirez. Yes, I am an American born in Puerto Rico, born and raised. The reality is that the Puerto Rican economy is on bankruptcy. 80% of the jobs are in the government, and the rest is being used to pay the debt. So it's interest after interest after interest. And this budget is managed by politicians. And that's a reality of Puerto Rico. And that's a reality of the territorial thing. And that's my main concern. What do you expect a government which is on bankruptcy, a territory which is on bankruptcy for the next 10 years? They're gonna get more debts and debts and debts, more employment. That's a reality. I don't know what option do you have for that. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Fred Riefko. I work for CSA Group. It's the largest engineering company in Puerto Rico. We've actually are exporting our services. We have offices from New York to Buenos Aires in that growth. And I think we're probably one of the few native companies from Puerto Rico that have been able to break the barriers of exportation. But it's been very difficult. We have issues with credit. And I must say that we lost three banks in Puerto Rico, but I really think we lost six banks, because for the next, I don't know how foreseeable future, we're gonna have serious lending problems. These banks now have to integrate the three banks that they acquired. So credit is gonna be very difficult. In that export effort, exporting and financing that export has been very difficult, because Puerto Rico has a financing structure where they have withholding tax on interest. A local Puerto Rican bank can't just finance an operation, even in the U.S. So for some things we're treated the same, for some things we're treated differently. I think that's a real challenge to any sort of growth or commerce. And then tying the commerce export, you know, it's again been very difficult to try to export our services. We have the same quality of engineers, the same quality, you know, U.S. educated, bilingual. We are the perfect platform, as you say, to expand into Latin America. But I don't think it's really encouragedly encouraged. I'd like to hear about the lending and, you know, if you've studied some of these barriers that are in place, even within Puerto Rico, quote unquote, exporting to the U.S. I mean, how can we then export to Latin America if we're considering Puerto Rico an export to the U.S.?
My name is Peter Fontanes. I'm here, chair of the Puerto Rico Empire State Trade Association. I think it's really important that this committee really launches itself on the right platform. I've been concerned because I came to the economic development because I happen to be someone who believes strongly that without real economic justice, Puerto Rico's never going to advance. And in order to have economic justice, you must have what I call political sovereignty. And Puerto Rico deserves that. To try to separate the two is like going around in circles again. And I think it's very important that you begin focusing on that statement right now. If you're going to be successful, not only for the people of Puerto Rico, but also for the United States and for the Western Hemisphere, considering the changes that we've seen that coming through a global economy. And we have to be prepared for that. I would strongly suggest, and I'm not going to kid you, I happen to be a statehooder, okay? I'm the chairman of the Mission 51, which is the National Coalition for Puerto Rico Statehood. But I've often said, and most people have heard me say, that if Puerto Rico decides to be an independent country and to seek sovereignty that way, I will support it 100% to make it the best country in the world. But if Puerto Rico decides to become a state, it's going to be one of the best states the United States have ever seen, and the rest of Latin America is going to see that. But we have to have sovereignty, and those are the only two alternatives. That's the way the model that you're trying to develop cannot be in the middle. It's got to be one or the other. It's got to be one or the other, because, again, we'll go right back to the same cycle all over again. That's all I got to say.
Good afternoon, panel. My name is Jaime Arizaga. I am the treasurer of the National Puerto Rican Coalition. I live in Virginia, and I used to be a White House fellow at the Treasury Department a couple of years ago and was able to be part of the previous panel. Very quickly, 3 points. One, I want to commend the president for bringing economic development into the agenda because the status is an issue. The economy is the issue. Politicians and a lot of people take the status as a way out to discuss because it's very easy to get into the whole legal and political discussions of the status issue, but it doesn't bring bread and butter to anyone in Puerto Rico. The issue is the economy, and politicians avoid dealing with the real issues of Puerto Rico by dealing with the status issue. So I'm real happy that you're having this subcommittee. I really think any future status option is going to depend on the situation of the economy of Puerto Rico. And if Puerto Rico is doing well, Puerto Rico can aspire to be anything it wants. Puerto Rico is doing bad, it will not be able to aspire. The Puerto Rican economy will not be able to aspire to something else or to develop what they have. Number two, the mechanisms. The mechanisms are in place to develop Puerto Rico, but they haven't been used. Puerto Rico has fiscal autonomy, which means U.S. income taxes do not apply to Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico can develop a tax structure to take advantage of that autonomy to promote capital investment and to promote jobs in Puerto Rico. Currently, the taxation in Puerto Rico taxes jobs. If you're on the payroll in Puerto Rico, then you're subject to all the tax rules of income tax. There are a lot of people in Puerto Rico in the high end and in the low end that are not on the formal economy. In the meantime, you have a property tax structure that is very low and it's locally managed. As a result, you have municipalities that have a lot of money, like Guaynabo. Guaynabo has a lot of money. They don't know what else to do with their money. But then you go to rural municipalities, pure municipalities that do not have the wherewithal for their own structure. So Puerto Rico has a lot of tools that it has not used, and they need to be used through their tax structure, which is something that was already raised here with respect to the withholding tax. And I think one of the recommendations I'll do for the panel is to look at the federal tax structure in Puerto Rico, because although it's said that Puerto Ricans do not pay taxes, Puerto Ricans and Puerto Ricans entity do pay a lot of taxes, beginning with Medicare and other taxes that are there. And I think as a panel, you can look at what ways to implement our tax laws on the federal side and which way Puerto Rico can adjust its tax laws to promote jobs. Because once again, at the end of the day, it's all about jobs and the economy. Third, a piece of advice that I can bring also to the board is, once again, to use the IRS to help Puerto Rico through its tax collection and its tax system, because there is plenty of money in Puerto Rico that if it will be correctly taxed and correctly spent, the Puerto Rican economy would be much better and Puerto Rican unemployment would be much lower. Last one, it's the Department of Agriculture is not here, but there has been a program in Puerto Rico that has been highly successful that was terminated a couple of years ago, which is PAN y Trabajo, Welfare to Workfare. Welfare to Workfare was a payroll tax credit using excess food stamps money that created 3,000 jobs a month in Puerto Rico, and it's no longer being implemented. You don't need anything else than to allow from the federal government to use some of that food stamps money that it's excess, that in Puerto Rico is given as an aguinaldo. When there's an excess money, then they give you another payment in the holiday season. Instead, we should promote jobs. Once again, it's all about jobs, and it's about developing the economy of Puerto Rico. I commend the president for bringing the economic issue over the status issue, because it is the issue. The status issue will take years to solve, no matter what. Puerto Ricans are very divided. It needs a whole process from the U.S. engagement. Things that we need to do now, it's the economy, and we can start today. Thank you.
I just want to make a comment. USDA is part of this working group, but I, just so you know.
Good afternoon. My name is Luis Vega Ramos, ranking minority member of the Ways and Means Committee of the House of Representatives of Puerto Rico. I'm an elected official of the Popular Democratic Party. I'm very happy that the task force is dealing with current federal programs and laws and recovery funds that have to do with helping Puerto Rico out of the current jam. But we also need to take into consideration, we need to look forward into the bigger problem, which is the need to fashion a new economic model for Puerto Rico, for the middle and the long term. Puerto Rico had a model that ran from the early 1950s to the early 1990s, which was more or less called Operation Bootstrap, which was based on the reality that Puerto Rico was the only common market jurisdiction with the United States at its time in the Americas. For 40-some, 50-some years, Puerto Rico had the luxury of being the only jurisdiction in the Americas to have open access to the market as citizens, of persons, of goods, of services, of currency to the United States. That started changing in the late 80s and in the 90s. And that's one of the fundamental problems that the Puerto Rican economy has. The structural advantage that we had for 40 or 50 years of being the only jurisdiction in the America which had an open market relationship, an open market access relationship with the United States, when that no longer was an advantage, then the Puerto Rican economy started suffering. And then we had the added blow that at some point, Section 936 of the Internal Revenue Code was repealed, and that was basically the whole structure that had permitted economic development and job creation in Puerto Rico for around 50 or 60 years. And that's the reality. We're living in a whole new different ballgame. So we need to deal with a new economic model that permits Puerto Rico to fashion its own economic future, to be the spokesperson and the main actor of a project that promotes self-sufficiency, that creates Puerto Rican capital, and that permits the exportation of Puerto Rican ingenuity, Puerto Rican talent, Puerto Rican services, and Puerto Rican corporations throughout the world. And to do that, our system can no longer be based on a grant of a law or a program that this Congress may give you called Section 936 so that a future Congress and a future administration may take away. We need to fashion a different model. And for that, ultimately, you do have to deal with the status issue. In order for Puerto Rico to have a long-term economic model, the status issue needs to be addressed. But in the meantime, maybe there are some things that could be done. For example, I think this task force should look very closely into exempting Puerto Rico from U.S. shipping laws. That could be very helpful in the short run in maybe lowering the costs of goods sold in Puerto Rico. It wouldn't be something entirely without precedent. It could be part of a larger arrangement in when the status issue is dealt with. But as starters, it is something that this task force should look for. Puerto Rico has a large investment in a project in the south of the island, southern part of the island, the Port of the Americas, that could greatly benefit by Puerto Rico being specifically exempted, or at least that port facility being exempted from U.S. shipping laws. I think you should really look into the possibility of acknowledging some scope of international economic authority to the government of Puerto Rico, recognizing that Puerto Rico took the capacity to enter into international agreements, economic agreements. I think that should be part of a larger package of the development of the current political status into a sovereign Estado Libre Asociado or a sovereign Commonwealth. But in the meantime, I think you should specifically study that option. Why? Because Puerto Rican's solutions to a better Puerto Rican economy will be made by people in Puerto Rico. The United States government can have all the good faith that they want to have, or that you want to have, and I understand that's the case. But only Puerto Ricans can look out for themselves in the economic international arena, and we need to recognize us, the people of Puerto Rico, the capacity to look and fend for ourselves in the international arena, and that doesn't necessarily mean that Puerto Rico has to break ties or break relations or break an association with the United States. That could be fashioned as part of the larger political and juridical model. But I want to leave at this part of the discussion with this important thought, which summarizes what I'm trying to say. In order for the community of Puerto Rico to really jumpstart as it did in the 1950s, you have to have an all-encompassing model. It cannot be a law here that can be given today and repealed tomorrow. It cannot be a program that can be here today and gone tomorrow. It cannot be a special package of funds that can be here and not be renewed the next year. You have to really look forward. And the tool to do that is really clearly taking Puerto Rico out of any territorial authority that Congress and the administration can have over Puerto Rico, or any remaining territorial authority that may be over Puerto Rico, and fashioning a future that what Puerto Rico and the United States decide it's good for both of them, it really has the binding force of a contract. Until we can speak and contract as equals, and that contract have binding consequences for both of us, Puerto Rico is ultimately going to be subject to what you decide is good for Puerto Rico, and not necessarily what we decide is good for Puerto Rico. And that's what that needs to be taken care of in order for the economy to move forward. I certainly do commend you in finding ways in the short run to try to get things moving again in Puerto Rico, and I'm really happy that you're doing that. But one thing is really linked to the other.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having this task force on Puerto Rico status. Pedro Marin, I'm born and raised in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and for the last 15 years I reside in the state of Georgia. I became the first Latino elected official in the state of Georgia, becoming a state representative, which I hold that office as we speak. I'm more into access to credit. I'm the vice president for the National Hispanic Caucus of State Legislature. And last year, in 2009, Congressman Joe Baca dropped a piece of legislation, H.R. 3171, Bridging Bank to Recovery Act, Bridging Bank Access to Recovery Act of 2009. He asked me if I could do and sponsor resolutions for the National Hispanic Caucus of State Legislature, which we did, and we adopted that. Bridging Bank, and I want you guys to take a look at that, because I have talked to leadership in Puerto Rico, and this Bridging Bank will also entitle to be placed in Puerto Rico. And what Bridging Banks do is allow for a new financial institution to cater to the unbanked and underbanked. As everybody knows, with the economy as we are right now, over 100 million people in the United States and Puerto Rico don't have access to credit. If you don't have that 620, 640 FICO score, you're in trouble. You can't access anything. What this bridging bank will do, will do financial literacy, financial education, and a graduating program. For people then, once they have a good credit score, then they can access any other products out there. I was former state director for LULAC, and we adopted a similar resolution last year in San Juan, Puerto Rico, in the National Convention, and Leo and Narraza and some other, I have spoke with them, and they're in favor of some type of legislation that will help the underbanked and unbanked. And why I'm bringing this up, because we have talked, and the piece of legislation allows Puerto Rico to be part of that bridging bank of Recovery Act of 2009. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. I am a member of the Puerto Rican Bar Association of New York, and my views here are my own, but I was formerly Secretary of Commerce for Puerto Rico, also executive director of the Economic Development Agency, and executive director of the Federal Affairs Administration here in Washington, D.C. Although I agree with my colleague from on the other side of the aisle, those who know me know I'm rabidly pro-statehood, I think it's very important that you listen carefully between the lines, because some of the proposals that have been made for the development of the economy in Puerto Rico make certain legal assumptions that are legal assumptions that are incorrect. And there are legal assumptions that have a direct effect and have had a direct historical effect in Puerto Rico through foreign-based tax subsidies in the island, whether it be Section 901, Section 936, or any of its variants. Puerto Rico and its economy was essentially a manufacturing economy for the better part of the 20th century, certainly from 1948 through 1980. And some people argue through 1990. What has happened in Puerto Rico is that over 40% of its GDP, which is generated by manufacturing, and increasingly and exclusively only by high-end manufacturing, such as pharmaceutical transfer pricing in Puerto Rico and the holding of royalties in Puerto Rico, has slowly but surely left the island. We've seen manufacturing go down from 34,000 in the year 2000 to 19,000 in 2010. And we've seen the general manufacturing sector going from 154,000 jobs in 2000 to about 89,000 today. But I think it's a little bit naive, and it's very important that this committee come across in a way with a clear understanding that certain proposals are directly tied to the status of Puerto Rico. You cannot pretend that you can have a federal tax subsidy under the foreign section of the Internal Revenue Code and think that that is not tied to status, because that particular solution precludes the possibility of statehood, and you're therefore ignoring 53% of the vote of the people in Puerto Rico in the last election. Whether you believe that 53% or not believe in statehood, they voted for a party that specifically advocates statehood. So when you come up with a solution or you think about a solution, be very careful of solutions that could only be applicable to Puerto Rico and its current territorial status. Be very careful of solutions that talk about exemptions, tax subsidies, really, for big pharma and high-end manufacturing in Puerto Rico, which only contribute 18,000 jobs out of a 2.2 million person economy in Puerto Rico. The focus really should be on a tax benefit and a number of programs that can be status neutral. Not on a program that calls on Puerto Rico to eliminate the maritime law for Puerto Rico, but make it different from the nation, because in doing so, you're essentially prejudging the status issue, and you will be actively opposed by at least 45%, if not more than 50% of the people on the island. And I'm not trying to denigrate the opposition. They have their own view. But don't be fooled into thinking that it is status neutral. When they argue for a new federal tax-based subsidy in the Foreign Revenue Code, in the IRC section that is foreign of the code, they are arguing for something that is status-based. When they are arguing for some sort of exemption from federal, additional exemption from federal taxation. They're talking about a solution that is possible only if we are not a state. So we need to be practical about the solution. We can't just hide behind conventions of what is great for Puerto Rico, a social compact between the independent nation of Puerto Rico and the U.S. We are a U.S. territory since 1898. And since 1901, through the insular cases, we've been deprived of full constitutional rights, even though we're born U.S. citizens. And the legacy of that, of Plessy versus Ferguson and Bidwell and others, is precisely to be treated separate but equal. Now, I've spoken a little bit about the problem. Let's talk about the solution. There are two solutions that are not going to solve everything. This is a one-hour agenda here, and frankly, it can't possibly solve the issue of Puerto Rico in 1 hour, although we're very grateful. But I do have two suggestions that I believe are status neutral and therefore sacrifice my view that Puerto Rico should be a state and don't necessarily advocate for statehood, but are possible under a status neutral situation. The first one is a wage-based tax exemption. We had it. It was phased out with Section 936 in late 1995 and sunsetted over a 10-year period in 2005. Why is that wage tax exemption good, important, and status neutral? Because it doesn't generate money for pharma through transfer pricing and allows pharma to repatriate its revenues, which are now in the $30 billion range. They may be cutting down jobs, but they're making a lot of money in Puerto Rico. What it does is that it tells U.S. companies, you know what? We will give you a tax break, but you will create a job first. You will pay a salary first. And then based on that job and that salary, you are going to get a tax credit. And that's not a novel idea. How novel could it be? You're a U.S. company, and we prefer you creating jobs on U.S. soil than creating them overseas, as the Section 901 companies do in Puerto Rico and do in foreign countries, but do so without creating additional jobs. Why is that a status-neutral solution? Because it could be applied not just to Puerto Rico, but for the rest of the nation. And you can limit it, given the budget limitations. I understand it can't just be 100% for the nation, but start somewhere, because it will do good for Puerto Rico. It will generate jobs that are being lost. It will even retain some of the mid-level manufacturing jobs that still have not left the island for China and the Far East, because those mid-level and even the low wage that still exist need to be able to compete with the razor-thin profit margins that they have, for which a revenue-based tax exemption is no good. So that's one solution you can take back to our president and cost it out with Congress and not be in the situation of having to argue according to status or seeming that you're favoring status by favoring Section 936 or favoring elimination of the maritime law as it applies to Puerto Rico or other areas. The second one is empowerment zones. Why is it that we don't have empowerment zones? Empowerment zones precisely allow for the development of entrepreneurship. They are directly related to the creation of jobs, and they don't just apply to Puerto Rico, which is anathema to many people in Congress. I mean, it is very difficult not to have a vote, and it is very difficult of not being fully represented in the U.S., and at the same time not being given the opportunity to improve our economy. So empowerment zones are the second solution, and they apply not just in Puerto Rico, but in the South Bronx, but in the South L.A., but in Detroit, in Mississippi, in California, and they are easier to implement. They result in millions of jobs. Now, I know I've spoken extensively. I will submit other comments in writing, but I think it's critical that if you take one thing from this hearing, is that historically to say that status and economic development policy for Puerto Rico are divorced, it's fanciful, it's untrue, it's incorrect, and it will be unworkable if we don't go and obtain status-neutral alternatives. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jerome Garfer, and I should have just given my microphone to Xavier because that was exactly what I was going to say. But going back to 936, I think 936, when it worked well. It worked through the mid-80s. In the mid-80s, two reasons why it stopped working. One, capital-intensive companies were the ones that were taken advantage of it. Labor was not being produced. Jobs weren't being produced. Second, as we all know, Puerto Rico has not been the only one affected by manufacturing jobs leaving the island, but the whole U.S. has been affected to it. So 936 ran its course. And I think wage tax credits are the way to go, and I think that's what you should take to President Obama. During his campaign, he promised specific job creation packages for Puerto Rico, and I think this is a great first step getting to do that. Empowerment zones, like Xavier was talking about, will certainly do that. And again, you know, you can implement it anywhere in the U.S., including Puerto Rico. Our well-intentioned representative did mention giving more autonomy to Puerto Rico and allowing us to sign our own treaties with other countries, sign other economic treaties with other countries, and being able to do that will spur economic growth. Now, the only issue with that, and President Obama should be aware of this, is that you will have 50 status panels to attend to after that, mainly Alaska, California, Hawaii. They'll all want the same thing, to be able to do their own treaties with other nations. So that's an issue you have to take into consideration. But I think we should speak more about empowerment zones and making it available to Puerto Rico, and it's something that can certainly be done immediately.
Can I just ask a question? So this past spring, Congress did pass the HIRE Act, which is a wage-based tax credit. Are the two of you thinking of something different than that, or is that what you had in mind?
That base. However, we need empowerment zones are a great way to get that done, and we just haven't seen that done yet in Puerto Rico. There's another issue that I think we should speak about, and we need the president to be on our side about, and that's a rum tax credit that's going on. Puerto Rico receives a rebate on the rum tax credit, and so does the U.S. Virgin Islands. Recently, the U.S. Virgin Islands has made its intention known to rebate to private companies as much as they want. And they have made known that they will be rebating to Captain Morgan or Diageo, the British rum maker, 35% of those rebates to them. Now, I mean, that's not a pony up profit scheme, then I don't know what is. And we need President Obama to speak on that and give us a hand there and be in favor of our resident commissioner, Pedro Pierluisi's bill introduced in Congress, as well as Senator Bob Menendez in the Senate, and support those.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Rosana Lopez. I am the ombudsman for Darley in Puerto Rico. Maybe you will ask or think why I am in this room today in this group, but I am here in behalf of 80,000 elderly people that are very related to the topic of financial and economic development. First, I would like to describe you that Puerto Rico have more than 80,000 people that is elderly people. And at the second time, and the second topic that I will bring to you is that there will be the biggest group in Puerto Rico and in United States too. So they are very related to the economic development of each country. And first in Puerto Rico.
Excuse me, Rosanna. Can you repeat the 80,000 people specifically? Because we lost you there a little bit.
80,000?
People from Puerto Rico are?
Elderly.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. And most of them, 44%, they are under the poverty level. And according to the statistics, Puerto Rico needs to develop strategies that concentrate on labor force initiative that will maintain elderly people at work and offer priority work spaces for those that need to finish their social security quotas or benefits. In the field of public housing, Puerto Rico only provides independent living facilities that are financed by federal funds for seniors under the poverty level. Likewise, the private housing industry for the elderly has been focused only on projects with federal funding, again limited to those under poverty levels, to the exclusion of seniors in socioeconomic levels. This has not allowed for the development of a private industry that will help generate additional economic resources in the island. The federal poverty level assigned to Puerto Rico does not take into account the cost of living standards in the island. which impose accessibility limits those who are not eligible for any government subsidized programs but are still living in poverty. Another topic that I would like to point out for you is the topic of the field of health services. For that, in constantly being jeopardized of health insurance companies with their limitation on services, that high cost of medications, specifically medications manufactured in Puerto Rico, which are shipped to the mainland US and then returned to the island with the retail prices, including the additional cost of transportation and taxes, and the lack of home health services, the availability of mental health services in dangerous limited, particularly at the primary level of care. One of the specific issues in the field of health care is the need to guarantee the availability of the subsidy for low-income Medicare beneficiaries should Part B be rolled automatic for Puerto Rico. Given the large proportion of the seniors below the poverty level, the cost sustaining Part B related expenses will be unbearable for too many. Without adequate transportation system, that is the other topic, that will provide accessibility to government services and private business for the elderly population, through the island, Puerto Rico may be still by characterized by the third world country. Puerto Rico today not only lacks of consistent transportation system, but also a system that will provide services to handicapped people and others with mobility limitations and those with specific health conditions that need transportation service daily, including those in remote and isolated parts of the island. Without adequate transportation system, either public or private initiatives to strengthen Puerto Rico economic structure and to increase quality of life among seniors as destined to fail. Our people, especially the elderly population, continues to provide significant contributions toward the development of Puerto Rico, as much as seniors in the United States also contribute to the nation's prosperity. The petitions conveyed in this letter on behalf of the senior citizens are not requested for privilege, but rights that need to be honored as soon as possible. Puerto Rico is currently coping with a catastrophic economic situation that has placed the life of elderly people in danger. Massive layoff among government employees, even those in positions paid with federal funds, have jeopardized the provision of basic services to all citizens, but most certainly to vulnerable
populations. I'm sorry. We need to keep moving. Can you submit that?
Yeah,
and we will certainly take the entire
account. I just brief go to the last of the sentence. We remain supportive of your agenda as president task force. I would like to contribute to my many means for you meeting appropriate to this achievement. I was thinking that elderly people was very important in this topic. So we'll relate to every development in the economic topic that you are working today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Rafael Cox Salomar. I'm from Puerto Rico. I'm an attorney in private practice here in Washington, D.C. And thank you so much for the opportunity. The first thing I would like to say to the task force is the following. It would be a very great disservice to the people of Puerto Rico were this task force to take away alternatives off of the table just based on status posturing. The status question is an issue that we need to resolve. There's no consensus on the island, both substantively and procedurally, to address the status issue. But the Puerto Rican economic issue is just getting completely out of hand. So I believe, in the first place, this task force should look at the big picture and should stop looking at Puerto Rico simply as a domestic issue. The malaise afflicting the Puerto Rican economy is not about sending us more transfer payments or coming up with counter-cyclical propositions. It goes beyond that. Puerto Rico already has a strong platform, a pharmaceutical, a technological. It has a workforce that has already dealt at high levels. And we cannot allow the status gridlock to get in the way. So I think that we should position Puerto Rico within its platform, its geographical platform, We have been interlocutors between the U.S. and the Caribbean and Latin American countries for decades. There's a lot that Puerto Rico can do in order to expand R&D, new energy technologies, research. There's a lot of things that Puerto Rico can do together with the U.S., but we need to get away from the status gridlock and that idea that somehow Puerto Rico remains purely a domestic concern. Thank you.
So we have about 10 more minutes, and so I think that leaves about time for maybe two or three more questions. Thank you.
Okay. Puerto Rico budget is divided between the federal funding and the local taxes. Puerto Rico received between $22 and $24 billion a year from our taxes. I say ours because now I live here in Maryland. I moved in from Puerto Rico. And I pay my taxes, which I am proud of, because thanks to our taxes, we have better quality of living. Some people deny to have a better quality of living and come here and beg for funding. I'd rather pay my taxes and see a better quality of living, having better school for my kids, and then you can work with the money. I don't have to be coming here to the States and beg for taxes for the people that work here. No, I want to pay my taxes in Puerto Rico and then expect that our legislature will know how to make a budget out of our taxes. And like I said, $24 billion from our taxes and $5 million on local taxes. That's the budget of Puerto Rico on a single year. Multinationals in Puerto Rico, they do three times around $80-something billion a year, and they don't pay a single federal money on federal taxes. Why? Because IRS section. And it's time that we make them pay the share. And IRS section was supposed to create jobs. Talking about jobs, look the amount of jobs they create. Almost none. So they're not doing the share. They're only making money, and they come here. I'm talking about the old 936 section IRS, pharmaceuticals mostly. And they pay for lobbyists, millions of dollars for lobbying to come here in Congress and stop any initiative that will create a self-determination process. So 936 session is related to our political status issue. Strongly related. People leave, make their living out of our political issue. The voice of the Puerto Ricans is unheard. We don't have representation in Congress. We have a resident commissioner who has no voting power. So I will, as a citizen, I would love to have representative senators who will go and demand or request, you want to hear it, the same rights like every other representative from the rest of our nation they do in order to have the fair share of the federal budget. So right now, our government comes here and requests, may I have tax exemption, may I have some more money, because somebody mentioned sovereignty. Yes. If you have a doctor, if you're a doctor and you have a patient, and you know that the patient is gonna die, well, you can't give it a pill. Give it a pill that it will die anyways, it may last a little bit longer. That's what's going on with the territory of Puerto Rico.
Thank you. For those, if there's anyone that has not had a chance to speak, please take a minute or so to make your remark.
Just a question to the panel. I had the privilege of serving in the Clinton administration 10 years ago, and at that time we were talking about Puerto Rico being a gateway to Latin America. 10 years later, we understand that it could be a bridge to Latin America, and I was just wondering what were the panel's ideas towards making Puerto Rico more of a substantive bridge to Latin America in its export policy.
William Ramos from Commerce. Well, through the President's National Export Initiative, as I mentioned earlier, which is geared to creating over 2 million jobs, first time that the President puts a full force into an export initiative. We want to work in partnership with Puerto Rico to be one of our partners in exporting into Latin America. We're doing that. We're meeting with the Secretary of Commerce in Puerto Rico as well as the Secretary of State. And we're working with some of the island municipalities specifically, and we've worked, we're working with Ponce on the issue of the Port of America. As the Port of America is one of the first post-Panamax ports where the big ships will come up through Panama, and it'll be the first U.S. flagged port for them to come through. So we could do a lot of import-export through Puerto Rico on that issue.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yeah.
All right, we appreciate your point.
Our last comment, please.
Good afternoon. Armando Valdez, I'm a former OMB director for the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, and I'm here representing Senator Eduardo Batia from the Senate of Puerto Rico. I would just warn against this straitjacket relating to status neutrality, because when we hear talk about status neutrality, what we're really hearing is proposals that would be viable under statehood. And in that sense, what we're doing is straitjacketing Puerto Rico's economic development. I would say that that straitjacket has specifically already damaged Puerto Rico's economy significantly throughout the years. If you look at the numbers that were cited here about industrial jobs, for example, 1995, Puerto Rico had about 160,000 manufacturing jobs. Currently, we have under 90,000. That's the first time since 1964 that Puerto Rico has had less than 100,000 manufacturing jobs. And that is directly related to the elimination of Section 936, which began in 1996 and ended in 2006, which coincidentally is the start of the current recession. Having said that, I would also posit that the elimination of Section 936 has affected bank deposits. There was a section in that disposition of the Internal Revenue Code that allowed those companies to retain their profits in Puerto Rico. Now banks have had to depend on broker deposits, and that in great measure has had a lot to do with the current crisis in the banking sector. So I would warn against that status neutrality straitjacket that really says more about options that are viable under statehood. And I would argue for the creativity that the US and Puerto Rico were able to display starting in 1952 and even earlier with the industrial exemption law that started in 1947, and later on with federal proposals that also exempted income from manufacturing operations in Puerto Rico. That sort of creativity is what allowed Puerto Rico to grow for decades, and it is that straitjacketing of Puerto Rico's economy tied specifically to status and status neutrality and really proposals that are viable under statehood. It is that which has really brought us to where we are right now. And that would be my warning and exhortation to the committee to really think creatively as we've done before to grow Puerto Rico's economy.
I want to thank you all for really a very interesting, lively, and substantive discussion. I think we've heard a lot of fantastic ideas for us to follow up and further develop. We've heard a lot about the intersection between status and the economic opportunities, and I think we're very sensitive to that, and we'll be very mindful as we continue our work. And so on behalf of the subcommittee of the task force, I want to thank you. I think that what happens next is that everybody else joins us here, but we have about 5 minutes for this transaction. Again, thank you very much, and I look forward to the rest of the meeting.